This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and along with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, we come to you every week and we discuss the topics, the issues that doctors discuss amongst themselves in waiting rooms, in doctor's lounges all around the country. We let you in on those private discussions so you'll be armed with the information that you'll need to fight for your healthcare freedom. This show is sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, a non-for-profit tax-deductible organization that was founded by doctors who are deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going, and it offers solutions that are very different than those that have been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who believe that they know better than you do about the kind of health care you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. This foundation is going around the country fighting for the health care freedom for all Americans and trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, which is very much in jeopardy right now. Please go to their website, www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, and contribute generously to allow these doctors to carry on the fight on your behalf. You might not think you need to be involved with this, but let me assure you that you do. If you're not a patient yet, you will be someday, and you'll want a doctor of your choice there to take care of you at that time. Well, unless you have been living under a rock for the last 48 hours or you've been on an information blackout, you have witnessed another wave election. It's very interesting because there have been, I guess, four consecutive wave elections that have alternated between Democrat and Republican. The Democrats in 2008, Republican wave in 2010. And then once again, Democrat and Republican waves in the next two succeeding elections. What's interesting is that this wave has resulted in larger Republican majorities in more states and in more government municipalities than ever before or ever in recent times since the Herbert Hoover administration. There are now 30, beside the Senate, which has 52 GOP senators right now, and the GOP has taken back control of the Senate, and there'll likely soon be 53 when the Alaska senator concedes defeat, and then Louisiana in the beginning of next month when they have the runoff. So that will give the GOP 54 senators and a clear repudiation of what's going on with the Obama administration. But I guess it depends on which of the news outlets you listen to, because on some news outlets, they are viewing this as an opportunity for bipartisanship, and in other news outlets, they're talking about this as a repudiation of the Obama administration and the Obama policies. But more than just in the Senate, this is a wave that has swept into the states. 32 governors are now Republican. That leaves just 18 Democrat governors. And more importantly, 70 out of the 98 legislatures in the country are now Republican. So now that we have the results of this tsunami behind us, what does it mean for health care? And I have on today as my guest Dr. Jeffrey English, who is the president of the Georgia chapter of Docs for Patient Care, the membership organization. He's also the co-director of the Multiple Sclerosis Center of Atlanta, and a doctor that I have worked very closely with for the last 6 years in healthcare policy and in politics, and just trying to fight the good fight for patients and doctors against the wave of bureaucratic overreach in healthcare. And we're going to go ahead and explore what happened on Tuesday and what the implications are for healthcare over the next few years. Welcome to the Doctor's Lounge, Jeff.
Thanks for having me on again.
Well, Jeff, was Tuesday about Obamacare?
I don't think it's specifically about Obamacare. Obviously, I think it's specifically about how people are feeling. I think it's largely economy, and what is certainly clear is I know that my paycheck has gone down, and I know I could name all of the costs that have gone up. So I think people are in general hurting, and I think people are afraid of Ebola and ISIS and things like that. So there's a lot of fear out there, and I think that's the main thing. I know, I always tell people is I think that I became an expert in healthcare economics because of the MS population that's multiple sclerosis, where it's a high cost group of people, and it's a chronic disease. And so I got involved years ago in trying to figure out how to take care of these people. That was under the old system, and now it's even harder under the new system. The very group that you're trying to look to protect, somebody with a chronic disease, are the people that get hurt by the Affordable Care Act, and it's exactly what I testified in Congress about just about a year ago. So we'll focus mainly on healthcare on this talk, but I think it's obviously much more than just Obamacare.
Well, the pundits said that this election was not going to be about Obamacare, that the GOP would be mistaken to use it as an election issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that was correct. I think it was a big issue, and every single Republican who won had on their platform Obamacare, repeal Obamacare, roll back Obamacare. So I think that it's my opinion, and I think that of many others, that the Republicans now have a mandate to address the broken healthcare system under Obamacare.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I think that there's I know my patients, and I see about 25 people a day. 24 of those 25 express difficulties right now with the cost of their health care, and copays going up and medications they can't afford. And total fear right now is their plans are changing, whether they can stay with me. There's not many doctors who take care of the patient population I take care of, and I gravitate towards the hardest of patients, not just with MS, but other, and the fact that people are deathly afraid that the new plan won't have me and they won't have access to me is real. And as you told me once, I was talking on another show on Fox, and you had told me on the way, just always remember that the healthcare law hasn't started yet. Everybody has to understand that. This has all been about signing people up for insurance. You have not even seen the gargantuan control of the federal government yet. And it was, correctly delayed until after this election. Unfortunately, that didn't work. I think people were smart seeing what's coming down the road with Obamacare and costs and restrictions and more government control that certainly has, in my opinion, not been good to the healthcare system.
That's right. The delays that you're talking about, one of them actually occurs next week, which is when open enrollment for the next wave of exchange plans goes into effect. It's a one-month open enrollment period, and I think that people will see their healthcare premiums go up. The amount that they're going to be responsible for after the insurance premiums go up. Their choices for doctors and where they're going to be able to get care go down. So that was a brilliant move on President Obama's part, putting that off until after the election. Otherwise, I think there might have even been a bigger wave.
Right. And as we talk about solutions, the people will see this before the Congress is sworn in. before the new Senate is sworn in. A lot of these things are going to happen. The statistic that I have is that 250,000 doctors, that's a quarter of the doctors, are not on any of the Obamacare exchanges. I am contracted for my neurology work outside of MS through our hospital's clinic, the Piedmont Clinic, and we're not on the exchanges. So one out of every four doctors is not on the exchange where people are supposed to be going to get their health care insurance. And I don't know the number in California. I don't know if you know it, Hal, but it's a staggeringly higher number than that, I believe, in California, where these restricted provider networks is so terrible and onerous that people, you know, it's great that they have insurance cards and they say they have insurance even though it's high deductible, but there's no actually doctor for them to go and see.
Yeah, and the number is high in Texas as well. There are many... Texas doctors that are not on the exchanges, and they've opted out of Medicare and Medicaid as well. So.
Right, but there's, I think in California, the hardest part is in those exchanges, the insurance products have purposefully restricted the provider networks.
Right.
So for instance, for me through Piedmont Clinic, I'm not by choice not on the exchanges. It's simply that the clinic has made that decision based on, I guess, obviously terrible numbers or something like that, that we can't provide the care that we expect in a good clinic like ours.
Right, and many of the insurance plans have tried to back in doctors that they have under their other commercial plans, only to find that once the doctors find out about it, they're dropping those plans for their commercial patients as well because they don't want
right.
to be part of the exchange.
Yeah, we were warned in Georgia, right, through the Medical Association of Georgia about reading and watching what the exchange products were going to do as they were trying to backdoor us all into that. I don't personally know anyone who didn't know that and got sucked into it, but we were forewarned by our association.
Exactly. Another provision that was delayed until after the election was the employer mandate. Right? That was
right.
something that happens on January 1st.
Correct. So there's a lot of mandates that have been delayed through this year, and they are supposed to hit. And that's, you know, I know as we go on in this show, we're going to talk about, you know, what we think is going to happen. But these things are, you know, what's going to happen with something that the American people don't like. The president has already delayed, and there's bipartisan bills that have come out of the House that permanently get rid of those things. It's hard for me to believe moving forward that the president's going to veto something he's already approved, at least temporarily.
Right.
And you know, again, those are the kind of things we have to sort of talk about as the show goes on.
Well, this is a very sophisticated audience, and they all understand that there have been 50 bills on health care that have been passed by the House of Representatives that have died on Harry Reid's desk.
Right.
And these bills are geared at going ahead and rolling back or getting rid of some of the bad parts of Obamacare. And,
right.
And some of them have actually passed Senate and gotten through the president's desk and got signed on, such as
right.
the part of the bill that called for long-term care insurance or the part that called for 10 monitoring all transactions, 1099 transactions, and mm-hmm. Trying to collect fees for that. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment, Jeff. We're up to a hard break, so we'll come back to this discussion about the impact on the on healthcare of the elections as we move forward. You're in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. and listen to the Doctor's Lounge, where you get a private insight into the conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. Join us Thursday, 8 a.m. every week.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded.
people all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge with my guest, Dr. Jeffrey English. We're recapping the 2014 tsunami election and what the effect on healthcare will be moving forward. Jeff, there are a lot of new faces in Congress, and many of them ran against Obamacare. They have heard from people that they're close with and consultants and allies what Obamacare has meant to America but they were not part of the Congress that voted in Obamacare. So they're neophytes in healthcare for the most part. What would you say to them if you had the opportunity to get them in a room and give them the 411 on healthcare?
Well, I think, you know, in general, as much as the politicians, when they're talking about, oh, the people just aren't smart enough to understand healthcare is too complex or immigration or whatever, I completely disagree. I think you need to be able to articulate what the problem is. And I look at healthcare and what happened in very simple terms. I mean, you and I can both attest, and everyone listening here, I promise you that Dr. Scherz and I have sat in rooms with Democrats over the last 4 years, or however long it's been since this was passed. Actually, I guess even before it was passed.
6 years.
But they essentially agree with us that the law as written is a terrible law. It's got, or at least it's got major problems that we Congress can fix, right? Well, we know this for a fact because so far there have been 42 changes. You know, about 24 of those have come from the president unilaterally and, 16 from Congress, some of which you just described. We know that it needs to change, and it's going to change through further laws and further presidents down the road. We need to stick to the simple principles in healthcare, right? That the president, in his original promises, which obviously were either political slogans or I can use the word lies.
You can use lies.
I think they knew this, but we needed to fix the uninsured problem, right? We didn't do that. When we started to have these talks about healthcare reform, they used to talk about 10 million people uninsured. Well, now after Obamacare, as the numbers got all inflated, it's 30 million, so we're three times higher with the uninsured population under this law. The costs were too high. Well, what have we done? We've actually increased the costs under Obamacare, not decreased them. The promises of keeping your doctor and keeping your health care plan, those were really important things for the American people, and that's what President and Pelosi and Mrs. Pelosi and Mr. Reid promised the American people, and they got the opposite, right? So you really have to focus on those main premises, and as you go in the next 2 years, especially with President Obama, is you need to be drafting legislation that fulfills those promises to the American people. I know when you and I talk to the politicians, again, we break it down into, getting control of healthcare out of the hands of businesses and insurance companies and politicians and bureaucrats, and getting them in the hands of patients. And that's the only way you're going to increase healthcare options for people. You're going to decrease costs that way. Obviously, these crazy mandates, why are you making me pay for whatever it is, birth control or whatever, if I don't need it or I don't want it. Mandates do only one thing. They increase the cost of health care for everybody. So you should have, everybody should have a right to all of those health care things, including contraception, but you shouldn't force everybody to buy things like that. All of these things have to be fixed, and I believe Medicare and Medicaid have to be fixed in the same way the private sector is fixed. And we got to get things back largely in the with guidelines from the federal government, but the states have to, you know, be largely in charge of implementing and trying different things, and we'll learn from states what things work and what things don't work. So, you know, we usually, when you and I have a long time with politicians, we talk a lot about you know, to get it out of the hands of businesses, you sort of have to equalize the tax structure and make people, whether you, no matter where you buy insurance, you can you get the same tax deduction, and that reverses that whole dependence upon employers. And then, you know, the advent of Medicare, you know, I love having a safety net for the poor and for the elderly, but you can't, once you get the federal government involved, you have politicians with lobbyists, and you start layering on all these bureaucracies and costs, and there has to be a way for the majority of people who want to opt out to be able to take their money for Medicare or for health insurance, et cetera, and you do it on the free market with less federal regulations, not more. These are very simple things to fix. What we're going to fight moving forward, I think, is still the lobbyists, right? It's the Democrats have their lobbyists and the Republicans have their lobbyists, and you're sort of, you know, fighting personal interests.
Some of the lobbyists are working both sides against the middle, the interests of the hospitals and the insurance companies and the pharmacy industry. So those lobbyists are party neutral. They just have their interests at heart.
Right. So who's ever there, they're going to be heavily lobbied by people with a lot of money, and that's the electronic health records, like the Epic system. That's one of the prime electronic health records that's completely obliterating healthcare, which, you know, I know you've talked about before in other shows. You know, the pharmaceutical industry, they're not going to care. They're going to strike deals with whoever is in charge. So, you know, again, what we will do as advocates is what all the legislation that we'll look for, if you put the decisions in the hands of patients and people and give them more options, then that's the only way we're going to sort of negate the lobbyists, I think.
So Grace Marie Turner, a good friend of both of ours and of this show, a guest on the show, president of the Galen Institute, had a step-by-step approach to Congress's 2015 Obamacare strategy in Forbes the day before last, and she laid out a game plan for what Congress needs to do. And I think that there was a editorial in today's Wall Street Journal by McConnell and Boehner that touched on it, but Grace Marie was a little bit more specific. I'd like to just do a rapid fire on some of the points that she brought up in her piece, which I think are right on target. So the first thing that she talked about was a symbolic vote of Congress, both houses, to repeal Obamacare. Thoughts?
I mean, that's great. I think we can probably finish this segment talking about this. You know, is that constructive at all? That's my question. I mean, I completely understand. I was listening to some, you know, talk show hosts on the right and getting really upset with a McConnell or Boehner if they don't try and do something like that with repealing Obamacare. I think the country already knows the Republicans want to repeal Obamacare, and putting that on the president's desk when you know that you're going to subsequently put bills on his desk that you hope he signs and you think he should sign because the American people want it, and he's already done some of these things with unilateral executive decision, I don't know that that's going to be a constructive exercise. It may be an exercise in futility.
Let me give you the opposite view.
Let me say one thing. If you had a repeal with a full plan strategic plan in place, I think I would support them doing that, because you could say to the people, no, this wasn't a repeal Obamacare bill. This was a, this is what we're going to do instead.
So you're saying tie it to something specific.
I think you have to. Otherwise, it's just, it's kind of like you're just, you know, putting gasoline on the fire with Obama when you want to then get him to get rid of the individual mandate and get rid of some of these mandates, contraceptive mandate, and all these other things we'll talk about.
Well, you know, that's a great point, Jeff, and that speaks to the fact that the left has they've put up straw man arguments for the last 6 years that the GOP has no alternative plan, when in fact, that's not the case, and there have been at least three separate plans that have been introduced in the House of Representatives, the Scalise plan, the Ryan plan, and then the plan that Tom Price, the congressman from Georgia, has put together called the Empowering Patients First Act, which we'll talk more about. But I think you're right. If you're going to put a bill on the president's desk to repeal Obamacare, it should be linked to one of those bills or all three of them, you know, put together as a comprehensive replacement.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, we need, what I would say is I would say that the they already have little bills they're going to do, which we can talk about with some of the taxes and things like that, that the president probably would sign because it has bipartisan support. In the meantime, you spend the first 3 or 6 months with the Senate passing a health care reform bill and then going through the process that was supposed to happen with Obamacare, and the House and the Senate come up with a uniform bill that then you put, that is a replace bill that has some of the things in or goals of the Affordable Care Act, but with free market solutions that they want to promote, taxed restructuring and things like that, and
right.
Then you put that on the president's desk.
But Jeff, you know, the argument about getting this symbolic bill passed and put on the president's desk is not so much to have President Obama veto it; it's to put the Democrat senators on the spot and make them vote one way or the other. And they've been shielded from this for the last 6 years by Harry Reid.
Right.
So this is, I think, an important step, but I think you're right. It needs to be tied to a replacement plan as well.
Right. Well, if you're talking long ball, you're saying, okay, well, then that puts those Democrats on the record for the next election, and it also, then you spend the time with a replacement bill that he again vetoes, but then the next vote you sell the people for 2016 is that when the Republican president gets elected, then this is what we're going to do, and this is how it's going to be beneficial.
Right. And again, you know, as in the spirit of this show, which is nonpartisan, it doesn't matter if we have a Democrat or a Republican as long as they respect health care freedom. But we know that the Democrats have shown a proclivity not to do that.
Correct.
So we need people in Washington who will allow patients the freedom to decide their own health care fate without it being rammed down their throat from Washington.
Right.
So then Grace Marie goes on to talk about some of the things that need to happen immediately. And some of the talk show pundits are saying that Congress should be passing one bill a week for the next 3 months, so that they show that that Congress actually can do things, because over the last 6 years we've seen, well, not the first 2 years, the first 2 years when it was when the House was controlled by Nancy Pelosi, they did a lot that needs to be undone, unfortunately. But over the last 4 years, we've seen nothing happen from Congress. So Grace Marie comes with a number of different provisions, which we are going to get to in the next segment. But I want you to start thinking about some of these things that she thinks we need to pass, which are the employer mandate, the individual mandate, IPAB, and the contraceptive mandate. We'll go through all of those things, also the onerous Obamacare taxes. So stay tuned and stay with us in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge with my guest, Dr. Jeffrey English. We are talking about the effects of the election on Obamacare and what the new Congress needs to focus on. So, Jeff, we left off talking about some of the suggestions that Grace Marie put out there about things that this Republican Congress should do immediately to roll back the most immediate destructive provisions of Obamacare. So employer mandate, that's killing business right now.
Yeah. So again, it goes back to what I said before. That if you go with the premise that remembering that the Obamacare was passed because Scott Brown was elected, so they jammed through a bill that hadn't been perfected, so it was never the law that was supposed to be signed into law, and all the Democrats already know that the law needed to be changed. And the third thing you hit on was that the Senate, just because of its unpopularity and Harry Reid was in charge, refused to take any of these things up that have already had bipartisan support because the Democrat constituents are hearing from, are calling their congressmen and their senators saying, look, I'm losing my job. We're seeing what's happening to business. And that the employer mandate, I think, has very widespread support, and this is not the forum to go into the details of all of the ways that hurts people, but you know, people are losing their jobs and people are now part-time workers and businesses are not growing. I mean, this is so anti-business and anti-employee that it has bipartisan support. So this is, as we talked about, this is a no-brainer. You already have House passed bills getting rid of this. Most of the economists, don't you agree, have even the more left-leaning economists have said you don't need this. And this
no,
is
absolutely.
Damaging.
You're 100% right. And just to be specific, this provision, when you say killing jobs and hurting workers, it's the 49ers and the 29ers. The 49ers are the businesses that are keeping their employees under the 50 employee threshold at which they have to pay for health care for their workers if they have larger businesses, and so they're keeping their businesses under that 50 threshold, and likewise they have to offer health insurance to workers who work 30 hours a week or more. So they're now scaling back their workforce, and they have part-time workers at under 30 hours a week, 29 hours. So,
right.
So this is a business killer.
And I would, for anyone listening to here, go ahead and you can Google a lot of places, Heritage Foundation or even the law itself. If you look at this part of the law, you know, these aren't mean, nasty business people trying to make money. This is so confusing if you read it. I mean, it's almost crazy when you list that. There's a reason there's been a delay from 2014 to 15 or 16 with this. And when you go to the, you know, 50 to 99 employees after 2016, greater than or equal to 170% full-time equivalents by 2015, 95 2016. They talk about things like penalties of $3,000 per employee or $750 for all employees, unless if you have one employee that goes and gets a federal tax credit because they decide to get it on the exchange, that has penalties. It's insane for, you know, if I owned a little mom-and-pop shop or actually more appropriate would be like a lawn service company, and I've got, you know, 40, 50 employees out there. I mean, I can completely see that, this is so confusing. I'm not sure what the implications are. I'm going to go ahead and limit my employees to part-time status and certainly keep them under 50 employees. I mean, it's insane.
Okay. So let's move on to some of the other things that Grace Marie said needs to go. I'm going to skip the individual mandate, but I want to talk about some of the unaccountable boards that the Affordable Care Act has created, notably the Independent Payment Advisory Board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so essentially the Independent Payment Advisory Board, who, if you remember, Peter Orszag, who was his, Obama's first...
OMB, isn't he?
Was it one of his czars? I forget if he was in his cabinet initially.
Right.
And he essentially said, as did Ezekiel Emanuel, that the IPAB should be so much more than is just written in the law and the number one mechanism of controlling cost in the government, not just in health care. So these people are on record making those statements. What the IPAB essentially would do is it would decide for Medicare it had to keep spending at a certain amount of increase compared to the previous year. The IPAB essentially sets prices to hospitals, doctors, et cetera, in order to keep those costs down. It's technically not a rationing board, right? Because it can't say you can't have X, Y, or Z. It simply tells you that if that service costs the doctor $100 and they tell the doctor they're going to pay $5, obviously the service is not going to be available. And that essentially is one of the main mechanisms by which they're just going to gut Medicare payments, because these patients, other than going offshore on the black market, won't be able to get these services because they're going to pay so far below what it even costs to get the services done.
And that's what we call covert rationing.
Correct. Correct. So, and then you probably know better than I do the exact data, but the Congress has already defunded much of the IPAB at this point, correct? And there's a lot of bipartisan support for getting rid of this, because this board is completely unaccountable. The Congress has 72 hours, correct, from the time IPAB makes a recommendation for the year. They have 72 hours to make equal cuts, and when they do, the president has the ability to veto Congress, so you would need the 66 override in order to go override.
It's a mess. Let's put it that way. But the truth be told is that this is already funded, Jeff. This is part of the HHS slush fund.
Yeah.
So it exists, and this, along with some of the other boards that have been created, like the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, which has been the board that has created the restrictions on mammograms and on PSA testing for prostate cancer for men. And then there's the PCORI, which is a board that looks at comparative effectiveness, and that means that if a treatment costs too much, and the patient is too old, that's what they do in England, they decide that they're not going to pay for it.
Well, it's worse than now. I'll give you an example right now, because the comparative effectiveness people just came out with a review of, like, multiple sclerosis medications, and they essentially have said, when I started doing this, we had no treatments. Now we have 10 or 11, and they have drastically stopped young people from being disabled. The studies are like 2 years, right, because it's very hard to do a 30-year study on a medication, correct?
Yes.
You can't keep people in a study that long. So they have they had scientists, not doctors, no MS people, did a review of all of the literature, mm-hmm. and their conclusion was that there's no proof that there's long-term benefit of these medications. So, you know, again, you and me as a physician, we'd say, well, I have proof that over 2 to 5 years, they're helpful and drastically helpful. We're having a drastic impact on our patients, keeping them working, keeping them married, all these things. I would say the flip side, there's no data in the literature that says they're not effective either. So
right.
These boards can use scientists that are not treating physicians, and they crunch out these numbers, and they can make the numbers say whatever they want.
Exactly. It's like trying to prove a negative.
Correct. Right. You can't. It's almost philosophical proving to me there is or isn't a God. You know what I mean? That's how crazy these things are. So obviously these boards need to be moved under congressional oversight. Right now they're sitting under the HHS, who is a figurehead for whichever president is in there. So
yes. And the point is that these boards created by the government are eroding the healthcare freedom of Americans.
Right. Right.
And so
they're going to come up with whatever statistic they want to say, okay, we're not paying for that anymore. There's no effectiveness there.
Right, which it speaks of the need to move healthcare away from third parties and put it in the hands of patients.
Correct.
And we'll talk about that in a bit. Another one of the things that Grace Marie talked about were the Obamacare taxes, which you brought up a few minutes ago in the last segment about the crushing taxes that Obamacare has been responsible for, most notably the medical device tax. And that there's bipartisan support there as well.
Yeah, what do you think about this? I mean, this is going to be very interesting you and I always look down the road. They make a change or they make a law, and then it's our job to say, okay, well, then what happens after that? Because the politicians stop right there, right? They don't say, okay, how is this going to have a negative impact? So, I've heard Mitch McConnell say several times in the last 48 hours about the medical device tax. Great idea. It's a stupid tax. You're having companies shut down, go overseas. People are losing their jobs, and the tax just gets passed on to the patient anyway in higher premiums and copays and things like that. It's counterproductive. However, that's a mechanism to pay for Obamacare. So when you get rid of those taxes, you either have to raise healthcare costs for people or start rationing. There are no other two mechanisms. So I sort of have a mixed feeling about some of these things. I almost think that you need we're going to get rid of the medical device tax and we're going to pay for it by boom. And that's part of the replacement idea, right? We don't need that money because we're saving costs over here by improving the healthcare system in this area.
Well, it's interesting that you brought that up because in the one of the replacement plans, the Tom Price Empowering Patient First Act, that has been scored by the CBO, and it was concluded that putting the Empowering Patient First Act, passing that would amount to a savings to the government of $2.3 trillion over 10 years,
mm-hmm.
And by shifting responsibility from third party payers to patients, to allow patients to control their health care, by rewarding people to have insurance with refundable tax credits rather than penalizing them if they don't sign on to onerous health insurance plans that the government decides constitute a meaningful plan, and that people are paying much more than they were expecting to. They're not saving the $2,500 that the president had promised, but instead it's actually costing them an average of $3,000 more a year.
Right, right. Yeah, and again, the simple concept that people need to understand, and the listeners, obviously the doctors understand this, is that, two-thirds of a physician's charge is overhead, and that's largely based on the federal government.
30 seconds, Jeff.
So once you put the patients in charge, empower the patient, then the overhead drops and the cost of the services drop and people have more access to the services. So simple concept.
It is a simple concept. And we'll conclude in the last segment with some of the provisions of the Empowering Patient First Act, a great solution that the GOP ought to embrace. This is the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. and listen to the Doctor's Lounge, where you get a private insight into the conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. Join us Thursday, 8 a.m. every week.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like. You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
This is Hal Schurz in the Doctor's Lounge. We're concluding our show today on the effect of the elections on healthcare with my guest, Dr. Jeffrey English. Jeff, we have talked about what needs to happen, which is that the Congress needs to start chipping away at Obamacare, but in order to actually come up with a solution that means replacing what we've got in Obamacare with something that is workable. And there have been some plans that have been proposed that have gotten absolutely zero attention by the mainstream media, one of them being the Empowering Patient First Act. Let me go through a few of the provisions on here and in rapid fire and in 30 seconds or a minute, just kind of go over each one of these, the main provisions. The first one is tax incentives for maintaining health insurance coverage and supporting health savings accounts.
Well, again, very simple. I think we're all in agreement that it shouldn't matter where you get your health insurance from. You should get the same tax benefit, and it should obviously incentivize you to keep the health insurance.
Second one is it calls for a pooling mechanism for individuals and for groups so that they can become part of high-risk reinsurance pools.
Yeah, there are great ideas. I know you and I work with Ron Bachman here a lot, and very much in Georgia we've discussed these things, and these could be across state lines. There is no reason why 10,000 people in Georgia and 10,000 people in Florida couldn't join together as 20,000, this big group, in high risk pools and even insurance buying conglomerates to lower costs.
Okay. Interstate market for healthcare insurance.
Yeah, so I think again, I'm still a huge advocate of the states running their healthcare system, but the federal government should be able to promote states working together in co-ops. So if six or seven states, they don't have to be contiguous, go ahead and come together and have insurance that's reciprocal from state to state. It would be an incredible way. Just as we said, we get all of the people who are individuals and you group them as one big group out of five states. Now you've got a gigantic purchasing pool that would be attractive to insurance companies and lower rates.
And by the way, this law calls for these states that get together to select one state to be the regulator of the insurance provider.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not having six state insurance commissioners, but it's selecting the very best one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Safety net reforms.
Yeah, so again, it's almost like, you know, I don't have a huge problem with the concept of, I mean, it's always hard to say this without people misconstruing it, but sort of Medicare for all or Medicaid for all. There needs to be a safety net. I think the safety net would shrink dramatically if you improve the free market healthcare system. Most people are going to gravitate towards that because, as you and I know, the cost of healthcare would be very inexpensive. You really only need a safety net for people who, you know, can't afford that, or the small percentage of people that have catastrophic things happen to them. And of course, society needs to, it needs to be able to protect people from that. We do it in the auto industry. We ought to be able to do it in the healthcare industry.
Here, here. Lawsuit abuse reforms.
So, you know, many estimates. I know I've seen Tom Price's numbers and talks about $500 billion a year in frivolous lawsuits. I'm sorry, not frivolous lawsuits,
defensive medicine, in
unnecessary medical testing to avoid the frivolous lawsuits. And we practice it every day. We practice defensive medicine. And, you know, $500 billion would go a long way in covering everybody.
So, you know, this bill goes on and on with all of the provisions that that Congress needs to take up to chip away at Obamacare, which makes sense for individuals and preserving health care freedom for everyone. But I'd like to take the last few minutes of our show today, Jeff. I think we've covered a lot of ground. This is a one-semester course that we're doing in 50 minutes.
Hmm.
But I think one of the ways that we can preserve health care freedom for individuals, and something that Congress really needs to take up, is something that you and I are working on, which is really giving individuals an opportunity to select their own health care and be responsible for the financial impact on them for the care that they receive.
Right. I mean, again, the overwhelming majority of health care can be bought for a fraction of what people are actually unfortunately having to spend in insurance. Most health care is cheap and affordable. And, you know, we have to move back towards that. And insurance should be just that. It should be insurance. If, you know, you get a chronic major illness like multiple sclerosis, well, that's why you had insurance, just in case something like that happened. But the day-to-day stuff, you know, I bet if everyone actually looks at what they've been paying the last 3 or 4 years, I guarantee you we're probably already paying out of pocket for most of the health care we're getting, unless, again, you have one of those a very expensive illness. Most of us, you know, with our deductibles and copays, are already paying cash for the health care.
Not to mention the very high cost of the insurance policies now.
Sure, yeah, I'm paying another $15,000 or $18,000 a year for my family of four, and on top of that, I'm paying, you know, $100, $200, $1,000, whatever test I get done, I'm paying that on top of it.
Right. So it would not be out of the question for individuals to be paying $25,000-$30,000 a year, perhaps more, when you factor all of that in and consider what they're paying for visits, testing, pharmacy, and their insurance.
Right. And just, again, all these government mandates you have that follow the line. It's a lobbyist that says we need to have this service and all the plans. They lobby the politician. The politician says, oh, yes, we need this for the children, for the old person, and all these mandates keep going up and the services keep going up and the costs keep going up, and then we have to start rationing things that we normally would have needed to pay for, you know, these things that the lobbyists have asked for.
But healthcare costs don't need to keep going up, do they?
No, not at all. Again, no. If you put the patient back in charge and they're paying for most routine care, you know, we think it would be cut down by, you know, 50% to 2/3.
And I think that the fertile ground for this will be approaching businesses. Correct.
Correct. Well, businesses and individuals, right? I mean, if First of all, if you just empower the patient to own their own insurance, and you do this with small businesses, which is the majority of us work for, you pretty much have cornered the non-Medicare market.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that you and I are working on is something that the direct primary care doctors are doing already, which is going out and offering patients the opportunity to get their health care at a subscription for pennies on the dollar versus paying their money to a third-party payer and then have to get that third-party payer to pay for the health care only after they've paid their deductibles and their copays.
Right, and you've paid now for the gigantic health insurance conglomerate and their employees and their lobbyists, et cetera. I mean, if you just get rid of all of those things and we pay for the majority, people have to understand the majority of health care is affordable out of your wallet and not, and you don't need all of those other people involved. And if we can get all the models that get those people out of the way, including the federal government, we'll plummet the cost of health care.
Do you think that this is going to be possible to get Congress to buy into this concept of getting out of the way in health care to basically have a smaller government when it comes to health care so that we can convince them that health care does not need to be expensive but can be scaled back and actually not be 17% of our GDP?
Well, we're not going to out-lobby the pharma industry, the hospital industry, and the insurance industry, but what I think we can, because Obamacare has made things so bad and we've got the train is really already going off the cliff, then things have to happen. And I think by promoting the ideas that Tom Price has and people like that, that puts the power back into the patient, all of those other things will get dragged out of the way.
Well, you know, I think that people like you and I have our work cut out for us with this 114th Congress. We're going to have to, just because they are now in power doesn't mean that they're going to do the right thing. And we've got
Our work has just started.
It has just
ended.
You're 100% right, Jeff. And we will continue to hammer these points home every week on this show. I want to thank you for being my guest today and sharing your views of what the elections this week has meant for healthcare.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, I want to thank everyone for supporting the Doctor's Lounge. We've really done a great job in increasing our audience. It's continuing to grow. We've had a number of faithful listeners and new listeners, and it keeps increasing. We follow the number of downloads from the website, which is something that's available to everybody. So I want to thank those of you who are listening. I want to have you tell your friends and colleagues about our show. If you believe in healthcare freedom and you want to know how to fight for it and what you need to be demanding in terms of what it means for you and your doctors and the care that you receive, you'll need to be armed with the information that we provide every week on this show. So tell your friends about the Doctor's Lounge and have them tune in and listen and download it and let's see if we can grow this. We'll be back next week with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik. Thank you for being with us. This is Dr. Hal Schurz in the Doctor's Lounge.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.